Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Hello, everyone, everywhere. This is Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast today. We're so blessed that you join us. We have a very special guest on today. We have the former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, David Rubin, on the other line. And he was the mayor of Shiloh, Israel, in the region of Samaria, which together with Judea is known to much of the world as the Western Bank. He's the founder and president of Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, dedicated to healing the trauma of child victims of terrorist attacks, as well as rebuilding the biblical heartland of Israel through the children. He founded this organization after he and his then three-year-old son were wounded, but thankfully survived, a terrorist attack on the car they were in. You can get in touch with David Rubin at davidrubinisrael.com or shilohisraelchildren.org. Now, David's been on our program before as we discuss some current events in the news concerning Israel and the United States, and I always look forward to our insightful conversations. He brings a perspective to current events not usually understood here in the United States. Now, David's also the author of the book, Trump and the Jews, and we'll get into that a little bit in the interview as well. Help me welcome back to the program, Mayor David Rubin. David, thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to come back on the podcast today.
Well, thank you, Pastor Bob. It's good to be with you again.
Amen. Now, David, just to give folks some perspective in case they missed your prior interview where we discussed this, tell us about you and your son being ambushed and surviving that terror attack. Tell us what happened that night.
Well, that was quite a number of years ago, but it's as real today as it ever was, and the impact that it had is something that certainly resonates today with everything that's happening today and what came out of it. Yeah. But the terror attack was on the last night of Hanukkah, of the Jewish holiday Hanukkah, which commemorates miracles. Mm-hmm. And so it was quite appropriate because we were coming back from Jerusalem, and I had my three-year-old son buckled behind me in the baby seat. We're halfway home, and I'm driving, and suddenly the car was ambushed by Islamic terrorists who were on the side of the road, terrorists from the Palestinian Authority, Palestinian terrorist organizations. And the car went completely dead when the bullets hit. And the car was just kind of coasting down a hill. I saw four orange sparks in front of my eyes from the bullets. They're tracer bullets. Yeah. And then a bullet crashed into my left leg. Mm. Blood started flying all over the place. And I tried to start the car, and the car wasn't starting to get away from the terrorists. Terrorists are still shooting. And then I remember I had my three-year-old son sitting behind me in the baby seat. I turned around to him quickly, and I asked him if he was okay. His eyes were staring straight ahead, wide open. His mouth was wide open. He looked like he was trying to scream or to cry, but no sounds were coming out. And I knew that I had to start that car quickly because, I mean, he seemed to be in shock, and blood is pouring out of my leg. It was just a terrible, terrible scene, and I turned the ignition, and the car didn't start. I shifted gears, and the car didn't start, and quite a few times. And then when I had just about given up hope, and I said, okay, let's give it one more try, and then I'll move up to Plan B, and the car started, and it started as if it had never had a problem starting before, and I hit the gas as hard as I could. And I drove approximately 110 miles an hour up the road to get away from those terrorists. The whole time the car was shaking, and probably, I imagine, from the speed I was going. My whole body was shaking, probably from the loss of blood.
Yeah.
But within a few minutes, I got up to the next community on the road, and I started shouting for an ambulance, and sure enough, an ambulance pulled up 30 seconds later, and just before that, there was already a gas station attendant that was at my car, and he was working on my leg. You know, I put a tourniquet on the leg to stop the blood flow. Mm-hmm. He said, "Don't worry, I'm also a paramedic. I know what I'm doing." And then I called my wife and I told her I've been shot in the leg and our son is okay. And so hopefully soon they'll be taking us to the hospital. Well, when the ambulance arrived a second later, the two paramedics from the ambulance ran to the car and one of them pulled my son out of the car and he started shouting to the other person in the ambulance. The baby has also been shot. He's been shot in the head. And a bullet had gone into his head where the skull meets the neck. We later found out causing a skull fracture, internal bleeding in the cerebellum, and serious memory loss. And all of this happened, and it all happened, seemed to converge at once. We were thrown into an ambulance, taken to the hospital, mm-hmm. and when I got to the hospital, and they took us into the emergency rooms. Shortly thereafter, I was told that they were going to have to operate on both of us within the half an hour, that it would be the first of several operations, and that my son, my three-year-old son, that he was probably going to be okay because the bullet had missed his brainstem by 1 millimeter.
Ooh, wow. Yeah.
And, but there were operations and a lot of years of psychological post-trauma therapy for him. Yeah. But I was also told that I was the 1,000th victim of terrorism to be hospitalized in that hospital just in that previous year and a half.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, so when something like that happens... So you know that your life has changed, or at least I did. I can't speak for all the other terror victims, but I knew that somehow that God had planted some sort of mission in me. I really didn't know what it was, and I only discovered it several weeks later when my son, who still had a bandage on his head and he was walking screaming in the middle of the night, and then one day I see him doing a little role play, and where he was playing with these little people dolls in this big car that we had, this toy car, and he turns to me and he picks up one of those dolls and he says, "This is the Abba, meaning the father, he's been shot in the leg. He has a hole in his leg, and then he, which I indeed I did even after the plastic surgery, mm-hmm. and then he pulls up another, picks up another doll, and he says, "This is the little baby. He was shot in the head." I personally burst into tears. I just felt his tears welling up in my eyes. This was the first moment that he had expressed anything having to do with the, at least verbally, about what had happened to him.
Wow.
And I realized that at that moment, I realized several things. And, you know, one thing that I realized was that this was how we could deal with his trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Because up until that point, we couldn't figure it out. He's 3 years old. It's not like you could just send him to a therapist and you could talk it out.
Yeah.
So that was one thing. And the second thing I realized was that this really was the mission that God had intended. And from that was born the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, or Shiloh Israel mm-hmm. Children's Fund, as many of you listeners would know it, and that's when it was born, really, and it took a while till I figured out how to do it, but that was clearly the mission, and And you know, so since then, you know, we've developed therapeutic and educational programs. We have a magnificent campus for terror victim children, and you know, all the children that have suffered. Sometimes, you know, we have an expression in Hebrew, Hakol Tova, which means everything is for good. And it doesn't mean that everything that happens is good.
Right.
It means that everything that happens happens for a good reason. And because what the terrorists intended for evil, God took and turned around and turned it into good.
And, how's your son doing today?
Thank God, he's fine.
Amen.
He's fine. He had a full recovery, and you know, and so we're blessed, and we're blessed that we're able to take that evil and make good out of it. And
so
that's really what we're all about here.
Yep. So with your Shiloh Children's Fund, do you have any estimate on how many children that you've been able to impact with your organization?
Thousands.
Amen.
Thousands. There are 2,000 children just on our main campus alone. Many of those children just think that they're going to school. You know, they don't even realize that it's a therapeutic educational program.
Wow.
But there are 2,000 children there. We have a petting zoo. We have a horse farm. There is a music playground, and along with all the educational programs, then we have the more formal therapy as opposed to the informal therapy, which includes music therapy, art therapy, sports therapy, and bibliotherapy, along with physical and occupational therapy and speech therapy. So all of those therapies combined with the educational programs makes our integrative therapeutic educational program. Plus, we've also built a lot of playgrounds in areas and communities in Samaria where it's not so safe to travel on the roads. So it's very important to have playgrounds within those communities.
Wow.
So that's what we do. That's what we're all about, and it's very exciting. You know that we're talking 17 years since that terror attack, and it's just a tremendous blessing.
And like I said, now God turned it to good. Amen.
That's right. And I'd like to invite all of your listeners to go check out our website, which is ShilohIsraelChildren.org. ShilohIsraelChildren.org. They can check it out. They can donate online. Sure. Great.
Yep.
Great.
Amen. Now, concerning the terrorists, were the terrorists ever caught and prosecuted?
Well, the terrorists were caught. They were prosecuted. They are in jail to this day.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that the Palestinian Authority is giving them salaries through their families, and they've been getting paid monthly salaries that are much higher than the national average. To this day. And then at the only ones, of course, that's multiplied with the hundreds or thousands of other terrorists that have committed terrorist attacks against Israeli civilians.
Yeah, so the PLO actually more or less gives a pension to people if they commit terrorist attacks and get arrested for it. And I think even if they get killed, their family still gets money, even if they die in the process, right?
That's right. And that has become a bone of contention between the Trump administration and the Palestinian Authority.
Mm-hmm.
Because they insist, you know, Mahmoud Abbas and his people, they insist that this is a sacred monthly payment that they have to give to all these terrorists. And then Israel has you know, the whole world demands that Israel give in to these people and give them their own country right in the biblical heartland of Israel, which is absolutely an insane idea. Yeah. And it would be suicidal for Israel.
Yeah. I mean, that I still don't understand how people can say, and it's being pushed by, you know, some of the more liberal politicians in the United States about land for peace, but there is no, you know, when they are sworn enemies, that their only objective is to destroy Israel, you know, you're just going to give them territory where now they can build more bases and things like that. That makes absolutely no sense at all. I think President Trump realizes that.
Well, President Trump is the first president in recent history that really does understand it, I think. He seems to have a basic sense of right and wrong when it comes to Israel and the Middle East. And he's grown also. I think he's learned a tremendous amount since becoming president in many ways. You know, a lot of times people look back and say, well, you know, he doesn't really know what he's talking about. Well, I think he knows a lot more. He understands the situation a lot more than previous presidents did.
Right, right.
He has some very good advisors, but even more importantly, I think his heart is in the right place.
Amen.
And, you know, and I think that's the most important thing.
Amen. I want to ask you, there's been some recent controversy surrounding two freshman congresswomen here in the United States. One, Representative Tlaib from Michigan, and Ilhan Omar from Minnesota. It seems like they're going to go try and visit Israel, but were denied entry. Then Representative Tlaib appealed on humanitarian grounds that she'd go visit her grandmother. And Israel said okay, but then she changed her mind and said Israel's being too restrictive in what she's going to be able to do while in Israel itself. Based on your knowledge, background, experience, you know, from the Israeli side of things, what was happening behind the scenes? What was the government of Israel considering when all of this transpired?
Well, it all started when they came into office. The two of them were elected in 2018, and they promptly came in promising to change the narrative that was accepted in Congress. And yeah, it's actually quite similar to President Obama when he came into office. Mm-hmm. Only he was involved in a lot of different things. So while Obama tried very hard to change the alliances of the United States away from Israel and towards the Islamic world, these two women came in, and that this seems to have been their major passion, which is to bring down Israel, to bring down the relationship between the United States and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So this really, one thing that they have intended to do from the beginning is to come to Israel and to come to Israel with a delegation that would be against Israel, that would support boycotting Israel, that would make Israel perceived as you know, this evil country.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been their intention all along. They've been very open and clear about it. So when they announced their trip that Tlaib and Omar were going to be making to the Middle East, and specifically to Israel, it became very controversial. Mm-hmm. And it was the question, well, you know, these two congresswomen have supported and promoted the BDS, which is the boycott and disinvestment movement against Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And Israel has a law that says, that says that anyone who tries to come into the country, any foreigner trying to get into Israel who supports the BDS will not be allowed in.
Amen.
Okay, but that's the law. But right. But there were those who were saying, there were those in Israel, in the Israeli government, who was saying, well, we still have this strong relationship with the United States, and any member of Congress should be let in, even if they disagree with us. So an exception was possibly going to be made until their itinerary came out.
Yeah.
And when the itinerary of their trip came out, it became clear, number one, the itinerary didn't say anything about Israel. It said it was a trip to Palestine. Okay, so which means that they clearly don't even recognize right. Israel's authority here. Then secondly, it listed the itinerary. It was organized by a radical Palestinian group, and that they were going to be going up with officials from the Palestinian Authority. They were going to be going up to the Temple Mount, which, as we know, is a powder keg for right. violence and Muslim rioting. And so they were going up there to incite violence. It was quite clear. And Israel had no choice, really. I mean, how could Israel, in its right mind, allow these two women to come inciting violence, not recognizing the government of Israel, not recognizing Israel's sovereignty, and we're going to let them come in and create havoc? No way.
Right.
No way. And there's no reason why it should have been allowed.
And if I remember correctly reading about this, part of their itinerary was they wanted to go up on the Temple Mount with PLO officials, which I think was against the agreement that Israel had with the Palestinian Authority about control of the Temple. There'd be no political activities up on the Temple Mount. Is that right?
Right. Palestinian officials are not allowed.
Yeah.
Are not allowed up there because we know that they only want to make trouble.
Right.
So it was absolutely unacceptable. And then afterwards, they were Rashida Tlaib, after their application, their visa applications were rejected. Rashida Tlaib was told that if she wants, because she was complaining about how she wasn't going to get to see her grandmother who lives in Samaria. She was complaining that this is not humanitarian, and it's Israel is an oppressive country, and they're preventing me from seeing my grandmother, my dear grandmother, who's over 90 years old. So Israel made it clear to her that as long as she doesn't come here promoting boycotting Israel, as long as she doesn't come here inciting violence, and if it's just a humanitarian trip on her own to visit her grandmother, then she will certainly be allowed in.
Mm-hmm.
And she rejected that offer.
Well, initially, didn't she agree to it? She, with the letter she wrote, said, "I'll follow whatever rules you establish," or whatever.
She did.
Yeah. And then when they said, "Okay, come on, here's what you got to do," and she's like, "No."
Right. Well, what happened? What really happened is that she accepted the conditions,
mm-hmm.
and she was going to come on her humanitarian trip to visit her dear grandmother, and then there was pressure put on her by some of her supporters, and they said, "No way, you can't give in to the Israelis. You can't allow any conditions on your trip." And I her grandmother even, jumped into the mix there, and she said, "No, don't accept it. Don't come."
Yeah.
And she cursed Israel. The grandmother did.
Yeah.
She cursed Israel. She said, she cursed Trump, saying, "May Allah curse him." And
Right.
The American media translated as "May God curse him," but
right.
We know what she really said.
Yeah.
Because some of us over here in the Middle East know Arabic. So but Trump had the best line in the end, and in general, the mainstream media didn't appreciate his humor, but he had the best line. He tweeted, that the only one who benefits from this whole affair is Rashida Tlaib's grandmother, because she doesn't have to see her granddaughter now.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that was,
he knows
that was
how to stoke the flames a little bit, doesn't he?
Oh yeah, and he did.
He just twist but, that little, yeah, amen.
Yeah, but she deserved it. She deserved it. She was just lying to the public, pretending that she just desperately needed to see her grandmother, which was total nonsense, obviously, because in the end she chose not to see her.
Hey everyone, Pastor Bob here. We are all out of time for today's interview with David Rubin. David, I love having David Rubin on as a guest. He gives us a perspective that you usually cannot receive here in the West, in the United States, as we discuss Israel, as we discuss the relationship between Israel and the United States. We always get it from the Western perspective. We always receive this information, usually from the news, which is slanted to the left, but also when the conservative, the Republican politicians discuss Israel, we get it from their perspective as the Western Hemisphere sees things happening in the world. I love having David on because he's giving us the perspective from Israel itself, and that gives an entire new meaning to current events going on in the news. Now, I encourage you to come back tomorrow as we conclude our interview with David Rubin. Till then, this is Pastor Bob reminding you, be blessed in all that you do. Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this: your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing FaithCasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting. Become a sought-after guest on faith-based podcasts. Share your unique insights and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with FaithCasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. Join the FaithCasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. FaithCasters, where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian can become a FaithCaster. FaithCasters, your voice, your platform, your success.